JC2S, Part 2.
Number 7A.
All right, so we go on with the subject, and always out from the standpoint of the throne of grace, always out then from the standpoint of mind speaking to the mind in us, spirit speaking to the spirit in us, soul speaking to the soul in us, principle, life, truth, and love speaking to the principle, life, truth, and love with us. Always knowing, therefore, that this subject is not a difficult subject, it's the most natural subject in the world. That's how we handle it from scientific obstetrics. As young students, we know that that's what we did, always realizing that we can't approach the subject as if from imperfection, asking after perfection, but have to feel that this is the subject we have always known, that we're discovering that which we already know, which is true. So one felt, and again, as a young student, that's what I would do, and I know many of us have done that, taking obstetrics and realizing that it would be impossible to approach the textbook or the Bible with the human mind. And know, as Mrs. Eddy said, the mind that wrote the text is reading the text. So it's our responsibility to respond to that. That's, we know, what Paul said to us so nicely when he was out preaching that we live by grace. And then we know that the mistake that they made during that time was to say, oh, well, if we live by grace, well, then live, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. There's nothing we can do about it. Fatalism comes into the subject very easily and very quickly. With this self-operating, self-regulating, error-preventing, error-correcting system that we study about. So what we want to see, that man does have a responsibility. We do have a responsibility within that system. We know that we don't have the responsibility at the point of the word. We can't go out and declare God to the universe. The Christians in early times and other religions certainly have tried to do that, to go out and spread the word. Well, the word is spread by a self-operating system. Principle God is declaring its nature to the universe. We see that through that self-operating sense of the word. And my goodness, we certainly know we can't play the Christ. We've tried it once in a while with ourselves, saying what we should do and what we shouldn't do in a situation, or with others. And as we see now, Mrs. Eddy has said that if we tried to tend the regulator of mankind, God gets after us for trying to adjust what he adjusts. So we've learned through experience we can't play the Christ. That every event is a God event. But at the point of Christianity, there's where man's role comes in. And that is where Paul said to those, yes, you live by grace, but man has a responsibility, and that is to have that reciprocal relationship between God and the glory of God and the gift of God. So he said man must respond by accepting the new faith and being steadfast in the new faith. So therefore, we see, yes, that's what we do. We respond now to the self-operating, self-regulating system, not with ignorance. We don't take to that ignorance. You know how in the second record of creation, with those two sons of Adam, first Cain and the next Abel, how Cain was born of the ground, and he offered unto the Lord the fruits of the ground. But Abel offered unto the Lord, he was a keeper of the sheep, and he offered the first of his flock. Well, it says in there how the Lord just didn't have any respect upon Cain's offering at all. And yet that's all Cain could offer. He was a tiller of the ground, so he offered that which came from the ground. But he had respect unto Abel's offering. Well, Cain, we know, represents the first degree, and the Lord has no respect for our offering unto the Lord of first degree qualities, of ignorance, that I don't know, that I'm so stupid, that I'll never get it, or it's beyond me, you see. These things we're offering to the Lord, that which the Lord has no respect for. It already begins to respect the moral qualities of compassion and wisdom, more of those second degree qualities. Already we offer it the second degree. We see there when mind comes to the human, those qualities that it already demands us to give are those qualities of true desire, of turning to God, to being a willing disciple, seeking, learning, logical reasoning, divine thoughts, having the mind of Christ already. So in no way does it say the higher attitude that it brings forth in us and is welcoming is a response of ignorance. So we see then that we approach the subject every day then that the teacher is the divine mind and that the student is the divine mind and that that mind which is God is speaking to the mind which is God in us. And therefore, we can see that it's just a question, as Mrs. Eddy said, as I said, the mind that wrote the text is reading the text. Then it takes us on a great journey. It frees us, she says. That detaches us from all material conceptions, so the birth will be natural and safe. And this is what I did every day when I would start out in the late 60s and early 70s. Then I was prepared to say, to go to the venture, oh, gee, this is what I know, this is what I know. I tried to make the subject very natural. And that's what she shows in this chapter, that Christian Science is natural. This is natural to us. Everything else isn't, isn't it? So with that consciousness, we always begin and see then that this, as we come close now and are in the sixth chapter, as we left it yesterday and we had the exercise to go over the law of this chapter, we see now that the big point she gives us on page 115 and 116 we saw last year, under the tone of mind is love. Here we have that big subject of the scientific translation of immortal mind and the scientific translation of mortal mind. Well, we know that Dorley and the Kapler group have called the first translation, this translation that comes first, the first translation, the scientific translation of immortal mind. And we know that they have called then the one that comes second, the second translation of immortal mind, though Mrs. Eddy never really called it that way. So we see then that the first translation is therefore one of the key root categories behind the sixth chapter. It carries within itself that tone of absolute Christian Science. Knowing, always keep polishing, that the subject is Christian Science. Therefore, this carries the vertical tonality in our matrix of absolute Christian Science, showing us that God comes to us. That's where in this chapter we've seen now that that's the Emmanuel sense, that God came to her, God with us. Then, because God comes to us in the Christ, that has an impact. And in this chapter, as the Christ, as a retranslation out of the universe, including man, including us, everything that isn't like the Christ, or at this point, isn't like God, the Word. So we therefore see, therefore, that we have that responsibility here only not to bring the first translation to us. We don't have anything of that nature, but we have that Christianity attitude of responding to the Christ coming to us as man and welcoming it, and therefore we've seen through our work with the first and second translations how we have to welcome it into our life. If we do, then it just goes on and brings forth this retranslation through science. We already know now, if we resist it, it appears as suffering, chemicalization, crises, which take us forward. But the point is, we always go forward, don't we? There's no way we can stop the Christ operation at all. Even though sometimes we would like to, we can't. So we see then that that whole translation, if we look on page 50 and we show the simultaneous translation going on, we see then that these two translations on page 115 and 116 happen simultaneously. This is something that when one happens and it waits a long time for the other one to occur. That one sees that when that first translation comes to us, and I just know this is an advanced class, so I assume we've worked with this Christ translation and retranslation. So when that translation of God, which is in the order of principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind, comes to us, God to man to idea, when that principle brings to us, let's say, that specific idea for the specific situation we're in, and we know it does that, because it does it then through law of principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. Through that order of that dynamic power of principle, which is a potential power, and that dynamic power of life, and the conscious power of truth, and that total engaging power of love, that comes to us and divinely presents to us really that vision that God and man are one. But that vision always comes specifically. That's what Spirit had shown in that order, that vision comes to us specifically, diversifying, classifying, and individualizing itself. If we look there on page 50, we can just revert. I don't have a slide of it, I don't believe, but no. Let's just look on page 50 on the top part, there at the Christ order in the study aid. And let's just freshen up there for what happens here. In a general way, we see then that as Mrs. Eddy presents on page 115, that God is principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. Then we see the Christ order on page 50, as Max has shown it here, that he couples together then this divine principle, life, truth, and love under the divine standpoint, really the divinely subjective standpoint. That is that standpoint which is just showing us that the potential power of translation is coming from principle. That principle itself is that potential power, that latent ability to act. And life, truth, and love shows the action of that potential power. So therefore, out of that principle, God, comes life, truth, and love. Comes, as I said, the dynamic power of life, the conscious power of truth, and the total engaging power of love. That's happening within the divinely subjective standpoint of being itself. That divinely subjective standpoint always objectifies itself at that point of soul. Soul becomes a hinge of the translation where its purpose is to make the subjective and the objective one. To make the God standpoint and what God is going to objectify as idea one. Because in the divinely subjective power drive, principle is bringing something to the universe, including man. What is it bringing? It's bringing idea, isn't it? That's what we see. It's God, man, idea. Principle wants to bring to us an idea. And therefore, it does it through soul, spirit, mind. That potential power of principle, which appears as the powers of life, truth, and love, as a divinely subjective view, objectifies itself divinely, therefore, as soul, saying, all right, what principle is going to manifest itself as idea, soul is going to make sure that idea is always one with the principle, that the subjective principle and its objective idea always maintain its oneness. We know that at soul. Soul is that spiritual agreement which is going on between God and man. It's reality at its deepest level where the subjective and the objective is one. So we say that soul is the hinge of the translation because it always maintains the balance. between the subject and object is one. Soul always maintains the infinite withinness. It never will let what God makes objective ever separate from the subjective. That's why it says there, the identity of subject and object, on the left-hand side on page 150 there for soul. See, soul always will do that. Never lets the idea get lost. Isn't that soul? Never does. It's going to always make sure that that idea is safe and within the system. Then we come to spirit. Spirit, as principle, objectifies itself as idea, and soul says, and it's always one with the principle. It's always in agreement with the principle. It's always in its coincidence with in the ever-withinness of principle. That intact balance is always preserved. But spirit says, but I take that idea, and I diversify it, and I classify it, and individualize it. I make it that idea which is absolutely adapted to a specific situation. That's where the mystery of the Christ is made known at spirit. You know, they always say, well, the Christ is a black box. Well, it's a black box to the human mind, but to the divine mind, which operates as spirit, it knows spirit. It knows what it's doing. It knows in that black box of the Christ that spirit is taking the idea. It diversifies God's idea into many, many ideas. But then it begins to take out of those many, many ideas that God presents, it begins to classify them into categories, and then it begins to individualize them and adapt them to a specific situation. So it is that rhythm of spirit, the ordering process of spirit, that knows the exact idea that is right for our situation. So that's that, as we see then on the left side, that spirit diversifies those ideas, it classifies all ideas into certain categories and individualizes them. And hence, we get the exact idea for a specific situation. Can we see? It's powerful, isn't it? God does that. It brings to us absolutely that idea which is right for the situation, and therefore that idea is comprehended in mind, and that idea becomes an image in mind. And when that idea comes to us through the Christ, that it brings to us through its divine mind reading, it just comes forth to us now through this law of the Christ. That does something. Once we understand the idea, it simultaneously analyzes, uncovers, and annihilates within us any claim against that idea. Now, if there isn't a claim against the idea, that's the preventative art. Then we're on absolute Christian science. The false beliefs have been purified already. And it goes on as a positive problem, a solution to a positive problem on absolute Christian science. And there's no problem, so to speak. But if that idea comes to us and doesn't find its likeness within our consciousness, then it goes through the error correcting system. It begins to analyze, it's not getting its response that it's like itself. And because the Christ is so tenacious, it's just the law. We cannot turn off the Christ. It's like that seeking element that they have in being, a sonar or a seeking, you know, how you can search out something and find it. Well, that's exactly what the Christ does. It is tenacious. We cannot turn it off. Sometimes we would like to say, well, let's get a shield, and so it can't find us to seek us out. But we can't. It just penetrates right through this shield and finds us, and therefore sees that there is an impurity there that isn't like that idea. Then that's when it begins to analyze that there's an impurity there. It uncovers it. And when it uncovers it, that's what we don't like, the uncovering of error. But as we know, that is unavoidable. But what we are learning when we study the Christ now, when that error is uncovered in our life, which can be a bodily problem, wonderful, we say. Isn't this wonderful that the arm doesn't work anymore? and I can't quite see very well out of one eye. We say this is fine because there's a claim against our identity. Either it's a claim through heredity that the arm doesn't work any longer and we're just not being able to raise it as high as we used to when we were a little younger. We say, well, that's just a claim of heredity. Good, let's get it out. Let it come out because it's not true about us. And we don't say to ourselves, well, I just am not getting along. I might as well leave this planet and go somewhere else. That's no solution. That's not Christian Science. The solution is that, behold, the field is white with harvest. As Max has said so often, these problems come up, but we have the methods of handling them. We have the methods of responding. We must respond. It's fatalism to say, oh, the arm isn't working any longer. Well, good, I've only got about 5 more years in this planet anyhow, so I'll drag it along. It's sneaky. See, that's spiritualism. That's the belief that something can be turned into its opposite and we accept it and we go ahead and die out in 5 years. There's no need, Mrs. Eddy says, as we'll see, that we must show ourselves and others that all must not die. And as I mentioned yesterday, the spiritual paradigm is radical. It demands higher demonstrations from our consciousness than we have in the past been willing to do. But we have to at least acknowledge what Christian Science is about. I mean, maybe we can't go out and have that crystal clear transparency to walk on the water or to have these terrific demonstrations that Jesus did, but at least through humility we can say that's Christian Science and that Christ will take us there someday. That's a discovery. So all that we can see that the subject does is it stretches us to us limit, you know, and just says, this is what you can do, and we just say, I can't, impossible. And this is what the prophets always did. When the God came to them, they said, choose somebody else, not me. There's no way I can carry this mission forward. It's too big, and anyhow, I'm going to be persecuted for it. Nobody's going to like it. The human hatred for the truth. So all that this chapter will do to us is stretch us to our utmost, but it wants to show us what the science of the Christ is, and therefore it will give us the vision. Well, as Mrs. Eddy said, I've given you the vision. Now it's a discovery. You'll walk that way step by step in the order of spirit. So the vision here really is then that Christ comes and uncovers these difficulties. And it's at that point we don't accept the difficulty through fatalism. Well, the mother had that, so I have that. The father has that, so I have that. Well, that's just how it is. You see here? That's accepting life in and of matter, that we were born in matter, the material birth. And it says, no, we've always been born of God. We have the white garments. Or if we don't accept a claim that comes from the physical genetic code, then we accept the claims of astrology. Well, that's just my nature. I get mad. If you're going to do something to me that I don't like, I'm just going to get plain mad at you. And I'm going to have a confrontation battle, but that's me. Well, that can be an astrological claim, can't it? That isn't really us. It may be that that's what astrology says about us. So we don't accept that either. We only accept what mind says about us, what spirit says about us, what soul says about it, what principle says about us, what life, truth, and love says about us, and that's right here and now. You know how the Bible says to beware of false prophets that are always saying it's around the corner, it's around the corner, it's coming. That can be a danger with this 7,000 and 8,000 year period businesses. Jesus said, behold, the fields are already white with harvest. And the tone of life, as we are getting into it now in theology, will say that we come forth from isness, from spontaneously forth from ever-present isness. This life tone should begin to heal us of a sense of that we're operating in time and space or things take time. That's divine science. This is where we get our instantaneous healings, because life in divine science heals the belief of causality within the physical or mental realm. So you see, this idea comes and uncovers. And at that point of the uncovering, as I say, we accept it through Christian Science, not fatalism. And we say, all right, I respond to the higher order that is coming out in my life. And the higher order is always then to let that go, to let that claim go, not to take it in, not to identify it with me, but it's being uncovered. The Christ is uncovering it, so it is not identified with us, so we don't identify with us. It's uncovering the false belief that we are not to identify with. And therefore, at that point, we turn away from the problem. That is, as John Dorley said, put the problem in the corner. Turn away from it. It's not a reality. It's just being uncovered. It's a false belief uncovered. And turn to the higher order. Turn then to the third degree. So that's what these three degrees are showing us, that analyzing, uncovering, and annihilation process that is going on. Really, we see it has the tonality of soul, spirit, mind. That soul, as we look on page 50, when it is making the subjective and the objective, always maintaining its integrity as infinite withinness, that acts as a transforming process. If it finds that something is lost, and that the idea may not find its likeness in where it's going, then it's going to reform. It's going to retranslate. It's going to bring back that object to the subject, because it wants to maintain its withinness. That's why soul not only brings the idea to us and maintains its infinite withinness, but it's going to start searching out and identifying that idea with what it has. That's why it's called the identifying power. When that principle brings the idea, soul maintains the infinite withinness, but it starts searching out to make sure that the purpose for which it's coming is going to have complete agreement with that idea. So it translates, and that soul then is, which is always the re-translation, the reformation, the reversing. It searches out. Therefore, if it doesn't find the likeness to that idea, it will bring it back to maintain the balance of subject and object being one.